This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
In this episode, we're excited to partner with Yuha, trusted and loved for premium breast pumps since 2010. Their portable and wearable designs provide comfort and convenience. They empower you to pump effortlessly anywhere, keeping you connected to what matters most. Discover the complete collection of Yuha Australia's premium breast pumps and handy accessories at yuha.com.au. And even better, you can use the code READY15, that's READY15, during the month of July for 15% off the Embody pump.
I was really toying with this complex emotional roller coaster. She was a colicky screaming baby, so bringing her to work was just hell. That was probably one of the hardest things for me to ever verbally say out loud because she was all I ever wanted. Vomiting 30 to 40 times a day, the rage that I was experiencing scared me. I don't know how we survived.
9 pregnancies, 2 living babies, and 3 businesses. Kira Rumble, the founder behind Crumbled Foods, Habitual Beauty, and Minnie and Me, has experienced the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And as her many Instagram followers will know, she keeps it incredibly real. I think that's why her story is so compelling, why she's so loved and admired by mothers and business owners across the country. She's navigated IVF, hyperemesis, both perinatal and postnatal anxiety and depression. She's had the sort of rage that has scared her, received an ADHD diagnosis, and she's done it all while navigating 3 growing businesses. And while her businesses might look glossy on the outside, it has not been without its trials and tribulations. Sending emails from the floor of your bathroom while just trying to get through another day of pregnancy meant that her businesses sometimes were hurting as she was. So she's not exactly sure how she got through it all. But luckily for us, she's here to tell her incredible tale. Here, we talk about how each brand came to be, how she's navigated tumultuous conception and pregnancy journeys alongside business, and what she's most proud of now as she begins to process it all. And just a note, this episode discusses pregnancy loss and suicidal thoughts, so please take care when listening. I'm Lucinda. This is Ready or Not. And here is the warm and wise Kira Rumble. Kira, from the outside, owning 3 businesses and having 2 children can seem quite glossy. So I wanted to know, how would you view your successes and accomplishments looking from the outside versus how they sit for you when it actually is you and it is your day to day?
One of my biggest things that I always try and do is be pretty transparent with everything that I do. And if someone jumped onto my Instagram, they'd see pretty quickly that it's not just all about highlights. And I think that that's something that I'm so passionate about because I am so guilty of looking at someone's profile or business and going, oh God, how do they do it? But then, you know, and then you'll be scrolling and you don't get any idea of the hardships that people are going through. And motherhood is not easy. Business is not easy. Working full-time with kids is not easy. And I think that social media in particular has such a good job of portraying everything that is the highs of someone's life and not really the reality. And so I think that's sort of something that is just always been at the top of my mind to do.
And so you've got these 3 incredible businesses, but you started off by hand rolling protein balls and selling them to cafes. Can you take us back to the start of your career and walk us through how you ended up here?
Yeah, I wish to never roll another protein ball in my life. My partner and I it started out with just me, and then I met my partner pretty soon after I started the business. I was diagnosed as pre-diabetic in my early 20s. So I kind of had a radical shift overnight in my mindset about the way that I should look at food. And I saw food to nourish and to help me thrive all of a sudden. And so I turned to studying nutrition. I turned to looking at the products that I was consuming. And I soon realized how much sugar and crap, especially at the time, there was in all of these healthy products. I mean, there were products out there that were saying healthy And, you know, using things like no refined sugar. And for me as a consumer, I was like, oh, great, these are healthy. But in reality is they were, you know, loaded full of dates and other things that were just so high in sugar. And so I started doing things myself and making my own products. And then, you know, I started documenting it because I was just so passionate about it, because I felt like I was almost done wrong by all of these bigger companies. And I got asked to do some protein balls for a charity, and then there were a few cafe owners there and they were like, oh, these are great. Do you sell them? And I was working a full-time, you know, job as an EA, and I was like, sure, why not? And then all of a sudden it just took off, and I was actually going through all of the branding in the packaging a few weeks ago. And it's just so incredible to see, because I reality is this, I've been in business for myself for a very long time, nearly, I mean, from doing my protein balls, it would be nearly 10 years. So It's not an overnight thing. And I think that, I guess, relating back to your first question, is some people might think, oh my gosh, she's just had this overnight success, but like, fuck no, it's been something that I've been working my entire adult life towards. And I now feel like we're in this really incredible space where we're growing, we've got, you know, staff, and I'm really now pushing myself to become a leader, which is something that I never imagined that I would have to be doing when I started rolling protein balls.
Rolling protein balls to three businesses. So now you have Crumbled, Mini and Me, and Habitual Beauty. I have used products from all three of those brands. How did it move from rolling protein balls to what you have today?
It sort of flowed. And we often joke that we should call Crumbled Group, which is the parent company, Life Cycle, because it's essentially followed through my own life's journey. Yeah. So, you know, from developing protein balls to then, you know, noticing that, you know, in my mid-20s, your skin starts to age, and then looking for, you know, a functional food, hence why we created Beauty Bites, which is this all-in-one snack and supplement. And then from there, Habitual Beauty, I was going through years of infertility, and I was looking for pregnancy-safe skincare that was just more of a lower tox. And I know that that is a bit of a taboo topic, having a low tox versus normal cosmeceutical and normal skincare. But I was just looking for anything that I could do, and I was grasping at, you know, straws for my fertility journey. And so I did, you know, completely change the way that we were living within our life and our household, which meant eliminating, you know, more chemical loaded products. And I noticed when I swapped to more of a natural skincare, my skin started going backwards. So I was, you know, again, annoyed. And I thought, well, if no one's doing it, why can't I do it and do a cosmeceutical grade, you know, cleaner skincare brand, and then, you know, fast track the results with a really high dosed collagen and gut health supplement. And then Mini and Me came about because I had severe HG during my pregnancies, and I couldn't stomach, you know, the likes of your chemist hydration electrolyte drinks. And I knew that, you know, pumping my body full of glucose and sugar was not necessarily the best thing to do. And I created another brand. And Mini and Me has just been such a rewarding product and brand that we've created, because it's really helping people. And yes, you know, Beauty Bites, it's more of that superficial helping, but you do have that gut health element and obviously Habitual Beauty, but Hydra Mama has just been helping so many people, and it just brings so much joy to know that it's impacting people's lives when they're at one of their lowest.
Hydra Mama and Beauty Bites both sat in the top shelf of my breastfeeding trolley for the first 10 weeks about, and yeah. Hydra Mama definitely helped with my terrible postpartum headaches, and having those Beauty Bites to go to in the middle of the night when you were really hungry, almost feeling sick from hunger, super helpful. So cannot speak more highly of your products.
Thank you.
So you're a business owner. When does motherhood start to enter the picture for you?
So my journey to motherhood was long. And one I was not prepared for. I don't think anyone really prepares themselves to have pregnancy losses and go through IVF. It was a few years into Crumbled, and then Habitual Beauty started. I was part of the Sephora Accelerator Global Program that I was put forward for, I applied for, and then I was put forward for. And that all happened, and then COVID hit. So I was like, okay, well, now's the best time to you know, I had a timeline and it was all I could think about and consume. It just consumed me. And so Habitual Beauty was kind of developed just before IVF, and then it was drawn out during that process. And then Habitual Beauty launched literally a week after my son was born because he was preemie. And then Hydra Mama was kind of developed during my pregnancy with him, the idea, and started, you know, we had formulations. And then after I gave birth, that was when we sort of really fast-tracked that to get launched. And then during my pregnancy with Goldie, it was, yeah, kind of it launched.
Motherhood must be a very creative time for you. Before you had children, were you nervous about how you would do both, how you would manage this business and motherhood?
Never.
Never. So it didn't cross your mind?
That's a really interesting question. No, because I was just so fixated on becoming a mum. It was all I could think about. Yeah, no.
To be honest, I think you're better off not wasting your time thinking about it, because it's going to happen one way or another and we don't have that much control over how it plays out. Whereas I was one of those people that always wondered how I would do both, and I don't think it really got me anywhere, but maybe it led to this podcast. So that's one silver lining.
Exactly.
I did hear on another interview, and you can tell me exactly if I'm right with where this fell in the timeline, that when you were in this Sephora Accelerator program, you might have been sitting down to pitch yourself and you discovered that you might be having a miscarriage at that time. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that I applied for it twice. So I applied for it first, and I remember this moment so distinctly. I was wearing an all-white outfit. I had my blue Chanel bag that I had saved up all of my money for. I was wearing heels, and I was downstairs in the food court because I had gotten there like an hour early. And I get a call, and they're like, your HCG is dropping. And I just went into complete shock. And I just remember shaking the entire way through the interview. And I can't even remember the interview. I can't remember. Obviously, it wasn't good because I didn't get it. And I just remember then going into the bathroom and just shaking. It was just that fight or flight mode. And it was just such a hard thing to come to terms with. But I was like, I can't even focus about this right now. I need to actually, you know, focus on this huge opportunity that I've, you know, had put in front of me. But you know, that timing wasn't right. And we then launched Beauty Bites, which was just such an incredible thing. And then, yeah, they reapproached me and they say, hey, like, we think you need to apply for it again. And I'm so glad I did, because it was such an incredible opportunity.
And what happened next time? Tell us about applying and being accepted for this program.
So I was actually in Morocco traveling, and I did this little pitch video and I applied for it. And actually, maybe that was the first time. I can't quite recall.
Oh, you've had a bit going on since. That's okay.
I mean, yeah, you're speaking to the person that sometimes can't remember what happened an hour ago.
Me too.
But yeah, I applied for it again, and it was just a great application. And obviously Habitual Beauty is such an incredible brand, and they saw merit. And then unfortunately COVID hit. So I was meant to be over in San Fran with these incredible female founders, and then it was turned to all online, which was so disappointing, because it would have been so much more impactful and so much more incredible to be face to face with all these, you know, amazing opportunities.
And so to get back to the motherhood piece, you mentioned in another podcast that your mother never had any issues with fertility, and that we often liken what our experience will be like to theirs, which I think is really fair. I did the exact same. Even for birth, I imagined that my births would be identical to my mum's. Your journey ended up having quite a few hardships. It's quite amazing. Can you please share what you're comfortable with in terms of going through, I guess, especially that initial conception journey to eventually get Hunter?
Yeah. My mother, God bless her, has four children. There's a 7-year gap between one of my brothers and a 14-year gap between my baby brother. And, you know, same parents. Mum had the IUD. They were both conceived with the IUD. So I naturally, you know, spent a very long time of my life trying not to fall pregnant. And then obviously when my partner and I decided to start trying, realized that I was in for a very rocky ride. And I mean, since the birth of my daughter, I've had nine, well, not since the birth, but I've had in total 9 pregnancies and I've got 2 living babies. So it was a very, very hard, traumatic few years having ectopic pregnancies, emergency surgery. It was just, yeah, a really dark, low time of my life. And in some respect, I probably haven't really processed all of it, but, yeah, it kind of took for a few losses for us to really realize that IVF was going to be the route for us. And IVF was, you know, what gave us both of our babies. So yeah, it's been a really long, hard, very consuming time of my life. And now I finally feel like, I don't feel like my family is complete. I feel like there's one more baby. But knowing how unwell I get during my pregnancies and obviously needing to run businesses and watching how the businesses nearly crumbled, no pun intended, when I was off with my HG, it's something that I really need to plan and actually ensure that, you know, I've got things in place, because my HG pregnancy with Hunter was nowhere near as bad as it was with Goldie. So I kind of need to prep for worse, if not the same as Goldie.
Just a quick break to tell you about the Yuha Embody wearable breast pump that I'm using as I return to paid work. It's small, lightweight, and fits easily inside your bra, allowing you to be hands-free, whether it's around the house, out and about, or at work. I've used mine while cooking, while settling Posey, and even during a live recording, and it's worked wonders every time. This wearable breast pump comes in a gorgeous travel bag and has strong comfort suction settings designed to yield more milk for your baby. It's chic and the minimal button design makes it super intuitive to set and forget. The MyUHA app offers an optional feature for remote control and tracking of your milk output, allowing you to share data with your healthcare professional to spot early issues with milk production or breastfeeding patterns. I can also hand on heart say it's the quietest breast pump I've ever used and I've had such a good experience with it. What's better is you can get 15% off. Use the code READY15 during the month of July for 15% off the Embody pump. Head to our show notes for the link. Yeah, so let's get to that. You had a more challenging than expected fertility journey, and then your first round of IVF, I believe, works with Hunter. You're pregnant, you're running these businesses. How does pregnancy go alongside paid work for you?
Well, not very well. So with Hunter, it was a lot more manageable because, I mean, we had COVID, it was lockdowns, I was working from home, I was working from the comfort of my own bed. I didn't have any face-to-face meetings with retailers. It was very much more manageable. And I didn't have a little child to look after too. So yes. It was just,
well, that really my dogs. Puts a spanner in the works, doesn't it? Having another person sure to look after.
It sure does. So, you know, I kind of, and I was toying between this really complex emotions of, I really hate being pregnant. I'm really unwell, but also this is the only thing that I've ever wanted in life is to be pregnant. Yeah. And so I was really toying with this complex emotional roller coaster of also feeling as if I had a responsibility to the audience of, you know, people going through losses to really cherish and love and never complain about this, you know, rainbow baby that I was very lucky to have. And it wasn't until 20-ish weeks that I put something up saying, oh, you know, I'm still vomiting all the time and I'm still feeling really sick and I'm well, but I'm, you know, so grateful. And I think the girl from Caitlin from Hyperemesis Australia actually reached out to me and she's like, this is actually not normal. I think you have hyperemesis. Do you want to do this quiz? And I did this thing called a puke score and I was off the charts. And I went to my obstetrician and I said, this is kind of what I'm scoring. He was aware of that I was throwing up, but I was doing a very good job of masking it. And it wasn't until I showed him that he sort of said, okay, yeah, you've got what you call HG. And I think having that diagnosis and that confirmation was really, really fundamental to helping me cope with it. But I also was thinking, oh, it's going to end soon. It's going to end soon. It's going to end soon. So my mindset going into my next pregnancy was, I have the longest time ahead of me.
Yes.
Which was a real mind game.
So I know your HG was worse the second time around, but before we get there, I guess on the precipice of giving birth, you're around the 36-week mark. You think you have a little bit more time before you launch your second business, and Hunter decides to arrive a little bit early. Tell us all about that.
Well, I was absolutely pushing it to the deadline for launching Habitual Beauty. And I guess this goes back to your question about, did you ever wonder about how you do it all? And I was very naive, thinking I could launch a business at 37 weeks. So yeah, my waters broke at home. I was also a high-risk pregnancy because I've got a blood clotting condition. So I was on blood thinners. So I was going to give, I was under the care of my obstetrician in Sydney. We live about an hour and a half away. The plan was always to be induced due to my blood clotting and my blood thinners. And so when my waters broke, it was sort of like, oh. I look at my partner as I've got water gushing out of my, you know, and he's like, we've got so much work to do. Is this actually happening? And his face was just as shocked as I was. And, you know, as I'm packing my hospital bag, I, you know, say, we've got to pack the laptop chargers, the laptops, and, you know, doing work during labor because no one else could do it.
Yeah. So what actually happened with launching then? How did you hand over the reins to someone else?
We didn't. So we had a girl, Jess, who was working for us at the time, who was just incredible. She was like, don't worry, I've got this. And she really was fundamental to helping with our web developer. And Hunter went to special care. And so I had actually a little bit of time whilst he was there and he wasn't able to cluster feed and things like that. So I was working by him, next to him. And we launched officially, I think 7 days after he was born. So back at home, he luckily was able to come home with us. And I was actually surprisingly and shockingly very coherent and very well articulated. And now I wonder how, because my brain is still mush. But yeah, it was an incredible launch. And there's this footage of me with this tiny little baby and breast milk all over my cardigan and my dressing gown and launching a business.
Unbelievable. I totally understand with the brain mush comment, because as I was telling you before we started recording, my children are now two, and then my child is now two, see, here's the mush, and my baby is 3 months old. And I think I've actually been navigating this podcast and all the work that comes with it better the first 3 months. And I feel like now I'm starting to get a little bit mushy. Tell us about those first 6 months of making work work when your partner is also in the business and you've got this little baby now too.
I found that my brain didn't properly start working until at least the six-week mark. And I say that very lightly. I feel like my brain didn't start thinking about work. That's probably better, until the 6 week mark. And I was in the shower and I found myself thinking, you know, about things that I needed to do. So it really took that 6 weeks to actually notice that my brain was starting to switch back on. But unfortunately, I couldn't really take much time off. And I go back and forth with this feeling of mourning maternity leave and slowness with my children. But also, I love what I do and I feel very fortunate to be able to be in the position that I am in. And it's sort of something that, you know, maybe one day I'll get, you know, a few weeks off. But it's complex. But my brain really, it takes so long to get switched back on. And you just sometimes stumble your words. And my daughter is nearly a year old. And I was saying yesterday that I feel like my brain is starting to really fire now.
And what did care look like in those early days for Hunter when you were navigating work? Was there any relief, or was it just a total mixture of you and your partner taking little bits of work when you could?
So the plan was to always have a nanny. So when I was pregnant, we started hiring and interviewing and we hit the jackpot. We have Nanny Sam, who is the most incredible human in the whole entire world. She is now the godmother of our children and our nanny. And I'm just so thankful to have her in our life because she has allowed me to never worry about my children being in care with somebody else. And, you know, what I have to go through is the heartbreak of feeling separated from the kids. And I made it a big priority. Obviously, with Hunter, we're in COVID, so I had the flexibility of working in our home office and coming and feeding him and popping in whenever I wanted. And the first few months, I was definitely working slower. She was, you know, started at one day at 6 weeks old and then, you know, did that for a few weeks and then, you know, built up. And it wasn't until he was quite a few months old that she did full-time work. And, you know, we've expanded. So we've now got our office and factory. So with Goldie, I definitely left it 4 months until I would actually leave her, but she was coming with me quite a lot to the office. But then, I mean, it's impossible. She was a colicky screaming baby. So bringing her to work was just hell. Driving anywhere with her up until recently was hell. So I just had to unfortunately make the decision to, you know, I knew that she was safe and I knew that, you know, Sam loves these children so, so much. And it's something that I really struggle with still because I feel guilty about, you know, not being there for them. But then I have to remind myself that I'm creating their future. And I really have to remind myself that a lot because I'm a better human when I'm at work and coming home and being so much more present to them. Yeah. So, you know, as soon as I'm home, I'm phone down unless I've got work to do. And I am all theirs. And on the weekends, I cherish it because I miss them so much. It's so, yeah, it really brings up a lot of anxiety for me some days when I, you know, Hunter's now at daycare 2 days a week and just dropping him. And if he has a bad drop off, I'm ruined for the whole entire day.
It's so hard. A bad drop off can ruin your whole week, can't it? It's just devastating.
Yeah.
But there is something to be said for all of that and the presence of when you are with them. Because I'm home at the moment with the baby, I feel like I'm distracted a lot because there's no routine. Whereas when my son was in care and I was pregnant, those were my 3 work days. So I'm feeling just as guilty by my major distractions that I'm engaging in all the time. So we'll have to find a way to combat that. But for what it's worth, I hear you there in a totally different way. So speaking of Goldie, your pregnancy second time around, the HG gets worse. Can you tell us about that?
We did IVF and we decided to do a full round again because we didn't get many embryos with Hunter. And, you know, my partner and I have always wanted a big family. He wanted 5 children, but that's absolutely not happening, especially with how unwell I get. So we've settled for 3. I think he's secretly hoping I'll fall pregnant with twins next. But I don't know how people do it with twins. Like absolutely incredible humans to have multiple babies at the same time. You know, IVF with a toddler was complex. We were still, you know, breastfeeding and he was still such a baby. And I did endosurgery before that. So my first night ever away from Hunter was when I did endosurgery. Yeah. And then, we did IVF and really, really fortunate that we fell pregnant again with Goldie. And then I made a mad dash down to Melbourne to see some of our retailers and say, I'll probably be offline for at least the first trimester. And it hit me hard. The pregnancy fatigue, obviously, is just, you know, really not enjoyable. And we had just moved into our factory, just moved into our office. I would fall asleep on our carpet, like our little rug in my office. And then I think one of the girls brought in a blow up bed for me to sleep in. And it just got, you know, consistently worse and worse and worse over the weeks. And it got to the point where I was just bedridden, really.
So when you're saying you're bedridden, are you answering any work emails or does it get to the point where you almost have to totally shut off from paid work?
Pretty much just shut off. I would do an hour a day and, you know, the girls, and I'm so fortunate that I have such an incredible team that really did all the heavy lifting for me because there's no way I would have been able to do it otherwise.
How did you deal with that mentally?
I didn't. I really didn't. I was suicidal. I had conversations with my obstetrician, not with my obstetrician, with other people about, you know, do I just terminate her? Yeah. How do I? And that was probably one of the hardest things for me to ever verbally say out loud because she was all I ever wanted.
Yeah.
And I was just so unwell that it was just, my life at that point was just to me, my mind was just not worth living. And the only thing that kept me going was Hunter. Yeah. And it was just, you know, consisting of, you know, vomiting 30 to 40 times a day. I passed out and hit my head because I was so lethargic. My partner, we were building the factory, so he was never home. So when Nanny Sam wasn't there, I was just, you know, getting Hunter in the morning out of his cot and putting blankets down in the bathroom and me just, you know, falling asleep and he'd just be in front of the iPad or down in the living room. And it was just, you know, then I couldn't make him breakfast. I'd have to give him a yogurt pouch and that was all I could even think about. And then Nanny Sam would come and I'd just have to go back to sleep. And towards the end, my obstetrician just gave me Valium because he's like, you are crawling to the finish line. And I was vomiting up blood from my esophagus. And it was just, my body was just shutting down. And, you know, I know that, you know, talking of things like termination is just such a polarizing thing for anyone to listen to, but it was my reality. My reality was my life was not living and it was either my life or, you know, the baby that I was growing. And, you know, I'm glad my obstetrician was like, let's just see how you're going and things like hydration and, you know, fluids. And I got admitted into a hospital in the home program towards the end of the pregnancy that essentially saved me because I had nurses. The thought of me going to the hospital was too much for me to even think about because that would mean that I would have to go there and I could barely leave the house.
So what was the hospital at the home program like?
It was great. So I went up because I was just so depleted. And, you know, obviously Hydromama was something that I was drinking throughout the pregnancy. And the one good thing was my electrolytes were never down and diminished, which was the plus side. But, you know, when you're throwing up that much, you know, no amount of electrolyte drinks that you have, no amount of anything, no amount of medication. I was on 7 types of medication. Nothing can help. Birth is essentially the only thing that can alleviate HG. And I went to the hospital because I think I'd hit my head or I was fainted. I just was really unwell. They admitted me and they said, oh, we've got this new program. You'd be the 5th person to be admitted. It's called the hospital in the home. That's where we get nurses to come out and give you fluids every day. And we can give you, you know, the medication intravenously and this could hopefully help, you know, get you to the finish line. And it was just life-changing because that meant that I could be in the comfort of my own home and, you know, they could come when Hunter was with me. And it was, yeah, it was really fundamental to help me mentally get through it. But I've never been in such a dark headspace.
And was it to the point where you almost couldn't enlist the help that you really needed because you were, it was nearly impossible to leave the house? I'm thinking in terms of psychological help, you can't have really been able to get much of that if you could not leave your house.
No, yeah. And it's funny because I had about 8 huge moments in my pregnancy that I needed to be on for. A, there was an expo, the Mini and Me shoot, and then a few other things. And I did it, obviously vomiting and throwing up and wetting myself, second time mom, which was great. But once I did them, then it was literally 5 days of just passed out, vomiting more. And, you know, on a good day, I'd be vomiting, you know, 10, 15 times. And then, you know, on a bad day, it was up to the 40. And the thought of going and trying to explain it to a therapist at the time was just, I had my therapist at the time try and check in. And, you know, there were days that I was just so exhausted and she obviously, you know, I'd just be like, I can't do it. And then, you know, you have to pay a cancellation fee. And so I was like, you know what? It's just, there's no point.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just, yeah, such a dark time in my life. And I really feel for people that get into that position because it's just horrible. And I'm really fortunate that I didn't have to work for somebody else because I would have had to have quit.
Fortunate that you were working for yourself, but I heard you say on another podcast what a hit it took to your businesses that you weren't as actively in them. Can you speak to us a little bit about that experience and again, how much stress that added to an already stressful situation?
I think the financial stress was one of the main factors because I was looking at the bank account and we had to get loans. We had to borrow money from my father-in-law. Most pay runs, how on earth are we going to pay for this? Because we had committed to a lease. We had gotten a huge business loan to get some machinery. And essentially, we had payroll overheads and we weren't making enough money because by the time the girls needed to get answers, I was, you know, it was hours. And I, you know, I lead the direction in marketing.
Yeah.
And it was, I think that was a huge contributing factor to, you know, how are we going to be able to live? How are we going to pay back all of this debt that we've accumulated? Just looking at, you know, I'm obviously tracking all of our growth that we've had in the past 6 months since I've been properly firing back. Like my brain has been firing to a degree. And it's just ridiculous that you look at, I don't know how we survived.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I can say this freely, but the staff all knew how tight it was. And I don't think they knew the extent. But, yeah, it was horrible.
That speaks a lot to your belief in what you've created, because a lot of people would just turn off the lights and say, you know, this isn't going to make it. How did your belief keep you driving forward in that time when it probably felt like a lot of things were falling down around you?
I think I intuitively knew. And I sort of made a decision with myself that if the businesses weren't back to where we needed them to be within a year, we would look at selling. And, you know, luckily enough, we've had, you know, a 1500% year-on-year growth. So it's huge.
That is incredible. And
yeah, we've just, it's just been a really rewarding time and I'm really enjoying the space that I'm in at the moment because I'm learning to be a leader and we have the most incredible women that work for us that I've literally found all of them from a local mums group page on Facebook or through my own Instagram. And we offer flexible working hours. The girls work Monday to Thursday in the office because they've got kids and they love spending Fridays with their kids. One of the girls works around, you know, school pick up and drop offs, and two girls are on mat leave. And it's just, women are the most incredible, hardest workers.
Wow.
And we shouldn't be impacted by the decision to have a family in our careers.
And what, I guess, did forced delegating teach you about leadership in that sense? Because if you've had the idea behind the brand, it can be really hard to let go, but I guess you had to. Did it teach you a lot about leadership?
I am a full-on control freak normally, and it speaks so much about, you know, how unwell I was with the fact that I was just towards the end, I'm like, do whatever.
Yeah, just do whatever. It for me.
Yeah, and I'm glad that, you know, we've got one of the girls has been with us for ages, and she's very, very strict on, you know, brand integrity and, you know, making sure that we're doing a bit of a refresh with Habitual Beauty, and it's very different. And she's like, no, we can't do this. I'm like, yes, we can. So it's, you know, it was really great that we had her working for us. But, you know, even my graphic designer, I kind of hired her when I was unwell and had HG. And when I came back, it was kind of like, oh, hey, this is how I operate. And, you know, it was a whole new experience for her because she'd never had me, you know, working in the business because I was always like, oh, just, you know, do it. So it was really difficult, but I am just so forever grateful for the team because they did such an incredible job. I mean, Minnie and me especially, I mean, it's just such an incredible brand and I'm just so passionate about it because it's obviously the life stage that I really am living and breathing.
Yeah. And so your pregnancy eventually comes to an end via meeting Goldie. You've had a really rough trot. And as much as I'm sure you're elated to meet her, she, as you said, screamed a lot and there was a lot to navigate there. Can you tell us about those early days of Goldie's life?
Yeah. I obviously had perinatal anxiety and depression during the pregnancy. I do have a history of PTSD from childhood trauma. So, you know, I am very predisposed to mental health challenges. And Goldie was a very unsettled baby. And she screamed for at least 3 months. And we pretty much had our factory up and running a week before I gave birth. So my partner, as much as he wanted to be present, couldn't be. And it was me and the kids. And, you know, luckily I had Nanny Sam that helped me so much, but you know, she doesn't live with us. And
yeah,
there were times where I was navigating recovering from 9 months of hell, you know, having suicidal tendencies in my pregnancy, coming to grips with the fact that my daughter was screaming, and I got really, really bad postpartum depression and anxiety and rage, and it really got really bad towards November, December last year.
Yeah. So how did that manifest for you, and what age was Goldie around then?
She would have been about 5 months, six months when it really started to manifest, to the point where, I mean, and after she stopped screaming, she was still screaming, you know, so it was still, you know, she wasn't that colicky screaming red purple face, but she was still screaming, and I just lost my temper, and Hunter was so young that, you know, I often think, well, I mean, you're going through this now. I often think, you know, him at the age of nearly three, he's so much more independent, and you can put the iPad in front of him. Please don't judge for the screen time, but you can put the iPad in front of him and he'll sit there and he'll be content. But, you know, I was, you know, rocking her, trying to get her to sleep, and he'd be running in and, you know, just waking her up, and it was just hell. And it got to the point where I hit my head against walls because I was so angry, and the rage that I was experiencing scared me, and I didn't want to take my anger out on my children.
Yeah.
And, you know, aggressively hitting my head and trying to stop this rage that I was feeling. And I went to my psychologist, who I found after Goldie, and she, funnily enough, had an HT pregnancy, and she just got me. And she looks at me when I tell her how bad it was. She's like, honey, if you can't turn a corner, if we can't figure out what's going on and help you and give you some strategies to put in place, you're going to have to go somewhere because this isn't safe for you or your children.
Yeah.
And as soon as she said that, it was just like, I really need help. You know, I had told my friends how bad it was, and they were the ones that were like, you need to talk to your psychologist about this. This is just, we need to get this under control. And, you know, it was a lack of sleep. It was trying to work. It was trying to, you know, everything had really compiled, and I was burnt out and navigating an ADHD diagnosis. And it was just so overwhelming that I just pretty much just put a plea of help to my partner, just saying, I need you to be home over Christmas and let me recharge my batteries, and I need, you know, the support. My brothers came up and helped, and it was just what I needed to get to the other side.
And so now I'm reflecting on this as though it was a while ago, but this was obviously just recently. So it's amazing that you can reflect on something that only happened really a few months ago. Now, when you look at that exact period and how you've moved through this time, what do you think have been the key things since then that have helped you heal and move forward, I guess?
I think acknowledging how bad it was and speaking about it has been really important, because once I started speaking about it, especially about the rage, it was just something that I was in by so many people saying how ragey they get, and that it was, and look, I know that mental health is such a common thing, and I think having a safe space to speak about it was really important, obviously therapy. And I think, you know, I was told different techniques and tools by my psychologist to really deal with those moments, and, you know, putting Goldie down in her cot and stepping out of the room while, you know, I take a deep breath and try and recoup myself and working on things. I mean, I did bedtime solo pretty much every night for many, many, many nights. When Nanny Sam wasn't there, she did stay back quite a lot. And I really struggled because it was challenging with two kids and a child that doesn't scream. And, you know, I've implemented tactics where I got one of the baby gates and I put that in front of Hunter's room, and I give him the iPad and say, okay, sit and watch your iPad while mommy goes and puts Goldie to bed, rather than worrying about him running in, stopping and waking her up and all of that sort of thing. So there's just little things that I've put in place that are just helping me survive this season that I'm in.
Yeah.
And I think my ADHD diagnosis was really helping because I was paralyzed by the amount of work that I was doing, and I was going to work not being able to do anything and I didn't feel accomplished. Whereas I would see work to feel accomplished and then come home and not feel accomplished. So
yes,
it was kind of, you know, compounding. So there's just been a significant amount of things that have really been that magic spice to help get me back to who I am. And I also did a fitness challenge that, you know, was just as much about me just prioritizing myself a little bit more by eating better food and moving my body a little bit. And it's just sort of, yeah, nothing in particular, but everything altogether.
It's amazing what you share, because I get those rage moments too, and it's hard to actually articulate how you feel in that moment. I've said to friends in the past, if I was a cartoon, I'd be like a head of fire. Like, it's like my brain is fire. Yep. So I know that feeling all too well. What is your schedule looking like now? I think you said you work full time, so you're very busy. Yeah. What does that look like, Tawik, and how do you fit in some time for yourself amongst that? Because I think that's one of the most challenging things for really busy mums, is where on earth is the actual me time? Because work can feel like a break from your kids, but as you know, it's not an actual break.
No, and then I can't speak for everyone, but after work I'm racing to get home to the kids because I miss them.
Yeah.
And Nanny Sam comes at 8:30, so if Hunter's not at daycare, I'll just be with the kids, you know, get them ready, get them fed. Nanny Sam will come. I'll leave straight on the dot and head into work. Work is a 40-minute drive for me, so I'll listen to podcasts or take meetings in the car, get straight stuck into work, and then, you know, work is chaotic and never the same day, and then head home and after work and do bed and bath and eat and do more work. It's kind of so Groundhog Day for us in that sense. If Hunter's got daycare, then I get up obviously earlier, get him off to daycare, and then come home with Goldie, and then Sam will meet us at home. Fridays I try and do home days, work from home or do external meetings, and the kids do have sport activities outside of school holidays, so I try and do at least one of them. But I am getting more busier with work just as we grow. So I can see probably in the near future that I won't be able to do that every week, which is a little heartbreaking. And then the weekends, I mean, one sacrifice that I find myself in at the moment is I am so fixated on not getting back to that burnout stage that I'm really not trying to overcommit. So I mean, I live away from my friends and they're catching up this weekend and I can't go. I want to spend time with the family. I mean, my partner works most weekends, so it's the kids and I, and I just can't overcommit myself at the moment. And I think that's been really hard for me to come to terms with, but I just need to prioritize myself.
Yeah.
And finding time for me, I mean, it's not there. It's not
sometimes
there.
I haven't had a pedicure or manicure
I haven't had a pedicure or mani in years, and it's something that I really would love to focus on, but right now I can't. But if it means, you know, getting a massage here and there, that's what I can do. But
and look, as we know, as our kids grow older, hopefully that comes back. So
right.
It's just one of those things. Sometimes I'm like, I know we need to find me time and it's important, but sometimes we just need to acknowledge that there are not many pockets for it. And that's as long as you're looking after yourself.
Yeah. But for me, I love cooking. So I'll put in, you know, my headphones and watch Netflix and cook. And after the kids go to bed, or, I mean, I love a good online shop.
So that's good self-care. Yeah,
I've been doing a bit of
that lately.
Absolutely. I mean, what else do you do at 3 a.m. when your child is woken up for the seventh time?
Just get really great deliveries in the morning. You're like, I forgot I ordered that.
Oh, you know what I'm classic to do? I buy accidentally two of things. So Zara, I don't know why, but whenever I shop on Zara, I will at least have two tops in there. But I'm not necessarily buying for myself. It's for the kids. But yeah, anyway.
I also did the classic ordered groceries, but they went to my in-laws' house because they had our son.
I've done that.
And I was like, so proud of myself. We'd done this meal prep, meal plan. And then I was like, fucking hell, they live an hour and a half away.
Literally happened to me, to my father-in-law that is 84. And he's like, what's all this chicken that got delivered? And I'm like, no.
How did that get here? I will let you go because as we've just gone over. You're a very busy person. But before you do, one last question. For a mum that's navigating an ADHD diagnosis alongside everything else that's gone on, firstly, how did that go? And secondly, how have you changed your work day to, I guess, accommodate this new you or discovering this new you?
Gosh, we could unpack this for hours. we could even do a follow-up. So
yes,
it's interesting because I found after giving birth, after Hunter, that I found that my implementation was really low and really lacking. And I kind of just thought, oh, you know, maybe I'm just really, really busy. And after Goldie, it was so apparent that I needed to get a diagnosis. And I mean, my mum's got ADHD, my brother's got ADHD. As we know, it is very much passed down. And it was when I got diagnosed, I wasn't shocked, but I just wanted to learn, how does my brain, how is it different and why is it different? And I never wanted to stop having my brain work the way it was, but I, you know, obviously acknowledged that I wasn't being productive. And I love my mind so much. I mean, I consider myself very creative. We've actually recently just done this human brain mapping quiz and analysis. And, you know, I'm very high in the quadrant of creativity and very low in the implementation. that's why I've got an incredible team. And I just told the team, I said, look, I've got ADHD. This is obviously explains why I come up with the ideas and never implement it. You know, just even little things like color coding things, listening to music. It's kind of, it has helped me appreciate everything that I've done with the way that my brain works. And I think that that was really fundamental into acknowledging and becoming okay with it.
Yeah. And lastly, I did say that was the last question, but I have one more because you've been on such a big journey. And I feel like you've mentioned things like guilt, for example, with your kids. But there's a lot to be proud of too. So I wonder, as a mother who has three businesses and two beautiful kids, what are you most proud of when you think about everything you've done?
I am very good at being very critical to myself, and I have huge imposter syndrome, especially now that I'm starting to share more of the growth that we've experienced because I've started doing things like Facebook ads myself and, you know, really trying to drive growth and scaling the business so we can, you know, one day give myself a wage. But I am really proud of myself and for doing everything that I've done. But my greatest achievements are my kids, because without them, the businesses never would be where they are today, because they are literally my driving force now to everything.
That's a beautiful way to end. I'm sure I don't need to tell anyone listening where to find you, but just in case, where could people go to find you or your businesses online?
My handle is Crumble with the K, and all the businesses are linked in there, and I talk about them all the time.
Thank you so much for sharing what has been an unbelievable story.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.